Happy New Year from the Great White North. Oh, boy, what a New Year's and Christmas season we had up here. Sorry for the delay, folks. We're trying to get our guest on from England today, Ms. Maggie Tuttle, who is a child abuse advocate in England, and she is fighting one horrendous battle against social service agencies. They call them the SS over there, with good reason. And it's an issue that, for all of us in North America as well, we have all seen cases where, of course, Children's Aid and the Child and Family Services and all these organizations, of course, they're necessary. We know that. But when they start in countries all over the world to take children from non-abusive homes for increasingly ludicrous reasons, like, for example, having a religious objection to a vaccine, right? I mean, when that kind of stuff starts happening and these children disappear into the system over medical issues or some kind of minor legal issue, Maggie has lost access to her grandson because of this kind of thing. And if you think that's not enough to make a very British, very energetic, very strong senior citizen from England get a little bit ticked, you wait and see what Maggie has to say, and hopefully we'll be able to get to her soon. We're having trouble getting through to her line over there, which I guess is par for the course. But at any rate, in the meantime, while the tech staff at BBS Radio are trying to get this call set up, then we have a few other things to discuss. Also, my friend Angel Femia, who is the executive director of Love Cry, I believe she's listening right now. And Angel, if you want to call in a few minutes, I would be more than happy to have you start talking in advance of Maggie coming on. Make it real interesting for people. So the number, you know, I've given it to you. So please, Angel, if you're listening, please call in. In the meantime, there's a couple of things that need discussion. And one of them is the horrendous disaster that Toronto and the east of North America, the northeast sector of North America, have suffered over the last while weather-wise. And our eastern seaboard is still suffering very, very badly. Until today, we had zero Fahrenheit weather with wind chill well below. And prior to that, up until yesterday, now bearing in mind our power went out 3 days before Christmas Eve, I got my power back on Christmas Eve late in the afternoon. And let me tell you, the temperature plunged to minus 17 Celsius, which is just barely above zero Fahrenheit. And had the heat not come on, I don't think I could have managed another day in my little apartment. But I was very, very lucky in that I'm resourceful. I was able to make a chafing dish to heat water and to heat soup and, you know, warm foods and things. I couldn't really cook, but I could certainly warm things. And I was able to make a hot water bottle just with tea lights and a cookie tin. You can get inventive, but you have to be careful because some people lost their homes because their homes went up in smoke because of candles. So you got to be careful. But I'll tell you what this whole scenario told us was this, two things. First of all, the city of Toronto does not have a very well-constructed emergency plan. And because of that, it was a couple of days into the crisis before the crews could really start getting their act together and get some power back on in this city. They should have been declaring a state of emergency, because the streets where the hydro crews had to go in were littered with downed trees. They couldn't get to the power problems. Therefore, the first thing they had to do was clear debris. Well, you know what? We've got army bases all the way around Toronto. The army could have come in, cleared the debris, and gotten the hydro crews working real quick. But that didn't happen. Why? Well, because the city determined that they didn't want to declare an emergency, and the province, which has the ultimate authority, completely ignored it. Completely ignored it. So here we are, and we've got an emergency system here in Toronto that the plan was developed in 1985, and I know the people who did it. Okay, I've lived here a long time. And so I know that this particular plan they're using now was developed in 1985. Well, you know what? That was 28 years ago. So if that was 28 years ago, look at how technology has advanced and how information has advanced and how equipment and things and training have advanced in the last 28 years. And you tell me, is our emergency system, you know, in place? Is our plan even workable? Apparently not, because up until yesterday, there were still 100 people in the city of Toronto with no power. Wires were ripped right off homes. You know, we had 2 days of rain. The trees got frozen. They had no sap in them because they're winter. It's in winter. And then we got rained on, and that froze, and then came the wind, and down came the trees. Well, did they plant the kind of trees around here that can withstand that kind of thing? Nope, they're planting Manitoba maples. Manitoba maples are beautiful trees, but they're also very brittle. And down they went. So we lost in Toronto 20% of our tree canopy. That's a fifth of the trees in Toronto were damaged, and very many of them damaged beyond repair. So we're talking about weather events, and we all know, those of you listening, I know you've got open minds or you wouldn't be here. We're looking at weather manipulation that is causing a lot of this stuff. Can you prove it? Well, hell no, they cover their tracks pretty well on that score, don't they? But the bottom line is that we are all in danger from the weather now. And because we're all in danger from the weather now, that means that all of us need to have a disaster plan. We need to know what to do in the case of emergency. And one of the first things that I noticed was not being done was that despite the fact of bone-chilling temperatures and all that stuff, nobody was going around door to door to check on people who might be vulnerable, who might need help, who might have fallen in the dark and can't get up, right? We were very, very lucky here. Nobody died because of the storm. We were very lucky. Not so lucky in the States, where a whole bunch of people died because of the storms. So this is not a joke. This is not something like that you can say, oh, that'll never happen to us, because it will, and it can. And we've gone through two major power outages here in Toronto in the last while. One of them knocked out the entire eastern seaboard. You'll remember that one a few years back. And now we've had this one with rolling power outages, and power outages that lasted far too long in the dead of winter. And political system that is completely non-responsive. And it's really, really up to us now, people. They want to create a nanny state, but then the nanny takes off and goes out to lunch and leaves you high and dry. So if you want any kind of a nanny, be prepared to be your own nanny. Get your candles and your emergency stuff in a place where you can access it. Make sure you've got flashlights. Make sure you've got some kind of a heat source if you need it, some kind of a cooking source if you need it. Make sure you've got all the supplies to run that stuff, okay? And make sure you've got alternatives if your alternative gear does not work for you, which, of course, is always possible. So be prepared, be inventive, be careful, and let's just see what we can pull off here in terms of what happens in the next disaster. What's going to happen the next time? I know there are teams that are called community emergency response teams that FEMA is setting up in the states. Now, this to me is an excellent idea because what it does is it positions people in the community to get there and start doing the things that are triage-oriented, that are organizationally oriented, things that can happen within the community before the first responders arrive. And this is an excellent idea because what it does is it empowers the neighborhoods and communities. It empowers them fully to take care of themselves before the government and their representatives get there to take care of you for you. You're there. People are there to help, to organize, and to minimize the effects of whatever's going on. So this is a really, really, actually a great idea coming out of FEMA. Really a great idea. Up here in Canada, we have one organization attempting to copy that. That's called Canadian Emergency Preparedness Association. They're based in Toronto. They're a registered charity, and they are prepared to put these teams in place. The only problem is that they are an NGO. They're a non-government operation, and it's kind of a paramilitary scope. So things are not gelling well, but we really, really need these people in our own communities. You know, you micromanage emergencies. You don't manage them from Washington or from Ottawa. You have to go right into onto the ground. You have to do grassroots management. And the grassroots, whoever has the ability to pick up themselves from whatever's going on and help, needs to have the tools and the knowledge in terms of how to help. What do you do in a flood? What do you do in a power outage? How do you keep your family safe? How do you prevent electrical fires when you got water around? How do you do these things? They're really not all that hard, and they're really not all that complex, and there's a great deal of information out there that can save your life in the case of an emergency, which, as we've all seen, can happen anywhere, anytime, to anybody. Doesn't matter who. Doesn't matter who. You know, it comes when it comes, and it does what it does, and we have only one opportunity, regardless of whether it was a manipulated event or a natural event. It's an event. Bottom line, it's an event. So if it's an event and you have to cope with it, best you know how. If you don't, you are in big trouble. And I cannot emphasize that enough. As a survivor, and I call myself a survivor now, of two rather nasty disasters. The first one, thank God, having happened in the late summer, so it was, you know, comfortable enough. It was, we were in the dark and we were incommunicado and we didn't have this and we didn't have that, but we were warm and we were safe. You know, it was just an issue of that. This time around, oh no, we're in the dead of winter in Canada. You don't mess around with the cold in Canada. People freeze to death up here really easily, as they do in the northern United States and over in Britain, where our guest is mysteriously not available. At any rate, where you live apparently does not matter. These events are happening all over the place. And, you know, you hear a lot about, oh, it's climate change. Well, they switched that from global warming, didn't they? Because global warming is a joke. Why is it a joke? Well, great example of why it's a joke happened in the last week. You see it on CBS New York News that there is this research vessel down in Antarctica. Now, bear in mind, this is Antarctica. It's colder than the North area. It's colder. It's the coldest place on Earth. And there's a research vessel down there doing research on what? Climate change. Yeah, climate change. Now, why is the research vessel there? Well, because it's the middle of damn summer down there. It is the warmest that the Arctic Circle or the Antarctic Circle ever gets, because they're as close to the sun as they can ever get. And in the middle of their summer, overnight. A storm blows ice around their vessel and locks them in. There was so much ice in this area in the middle of summer. Okay, bear in mind it just passed their summer solstice. Their summer solstice is our winter solstice, which was December 21st. Least light, least heat of the year on our end. Most heat, most light of the year for them. And in the middle of this, it not only locked up their research vessel, but it also backed off an icebreaker that said the ice was too much for them to manage. Something like 7 meters thick. That would be over 22 feet thick. Okay. Now, if the ice down there in the middle of so-called climate change, so-called global warming, and they're still telling us that the glaciers are melting the North Pole, and I'm looking at, wait a minute, how can that be? Well, we have three guesses, and the first two don't count. It's crap. It's bull. It's a lie. We've got climate changes going on. Yes, we do, but these are cyclical and belong to the Earth. They don't belong to man. Now we've got weather events that are being manipulated in order to make everybody believe that there's such a thing as climate change that is not attributable to nature, but is attributable only to us. Now, when they say it's us, what does that say? Well, that says they can control us. Now, what did I do yesterday? I went out to my local variety stores and bodegas and things in my neighborhood, stocking up on incandescent light bulbs. Why? Because in its wisdom, our government has said, thou shalt not use incandescent light bulbs because they use too much electricity. Really? So what happened? They decided that we should all use compact fluorescent light bulbs, CFLs. Okay? Where are CFLs all made? Every single one of them. China. Yep. The same place that gives us melamine and baby foods, feeds human feces in their fish farms. And I'm telling you, do not buy tilapia and do not buy bassa fillets. Bassa comes out of the Mekong River Delta, the dirtiest river in the world. And the tilapia that comes from China is fed chicken crap and human crap. Now, if you want to eat that, you go right ahead. I know the fish tastes good because I've had it, okay? But when you consider what it's constructed of, maybe it's time you shopped at home. And maybe it's time, due to Fukushima, that you considered buying food from the Atlantic coast, not the Pacific coast. Because I'll tell you, scientists are now saying that the Pacific Ocean may be dying. Why are they saying that? Well, they're saying that because the Pacific Ocean has been discovered to have a huge, huge portion of the ocean floor covered by dead sea creatures. And as one of the guys here at BBS was saying earlier, the fish farms, the salmon runs, they're turning yellow from the radiation. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. The amount of information they are suppressing and keeping from us that has to do with our own health is absolutely scary, absolutely terrifying. And you got to think about your kids and your grandkids, because even if we all survive this, our future generations are going to be living in a toxic cesspool. And whose fault is it? Is it the government's fault? Is it really? Or is it ours? We allowed it, didn't we? We voted for these people. We trusted in them. And then they turn around and they betray us. And they run things corruptly. And what do? Oh, we'll wait for an election. We'll put the other side in. And what do we find when we get the other side? Well, it's sort of like we're all mice and all politicians are cats, and you can elect whatever color a cat you want. But the bottom line is, it's a cat. It's a cat. Now, this particular concept was captured very, very well. You can search this out on YouTube. It is very, very much worth your time to see this particular little presentation on YouTube. And what it is the story of Mouseland. Mouseland. Look up Mouseland on YouTube, narrated by none other than Kiefer Sutherland. Why was it narrated by Kiefer Sutherland? Well, that's because the person who made the speech in the House of Commons in Canada, in our government, the guy who made that speech was none other than Tommy Douglas. Tommy Douglas was the founder of one of our big political parties up here, and he is Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather, Donald Sutherland's father. The guy was amazing. He was amazing. This particular speech that he made has been made into a little cartoon, okay? And the cartoon puts it across, who are you voting for when you vote? And fascinating that it actually came out in a government format, in Parliament. It's on the record on Hansard, which is our record of whatever is said in Parliament and done in Parliament. Hansard is the official record. And it's in there. Speech was made right in our government. But the cartoon presentation is really worth watching. And like I said, it's narrated by Kiefer Sutherland, so it's really well done. It's worth a look. So just Google it, Mouseland, narrated by Kiefer Sutherland. Search it on the YouTube search engine. You'll find it. You'll find it on Google. You'll find it anywhere on any search engine. And give it a listen, because it'll tell you exactly what kind of responsibility we the mice have. And when you look at the U.S. Constitution, okay, what does it say in there? It literally says that the people have the obligation to replace a government that is corrupt, does it not? I mean, I'm a Canadian, but I think I got that one right. And if we have the obligation to protect ourselves from corrupt government, where the hell have we all been for the last 100 years while all this was being constructed behind our back? And in fact, now in front of our faces. Because as we were discussing earlier today, all this stuff that we've been talking about as conspiracy theories are now conspiracy fact, provable beyond a shadow of a doubt. And still the people sit on their cushioned tushes and play with their iPads and watch the New Year's Rose Bowl game and this kind of game and that kind of game and the reality shows, the New Jersey Housewives and all that kind of garbage. Like, excuse me. Our entertainment has now become getting laughs out of people who don't know any better, who are literally running their lives ridiculously, and we sit there and point and laugh at them, and this is our entertainment. This is the level of our thought. Well, how do you turn a whole nation around? How do you turn a population around from a bunch of people who literally do not pay any attention to what's going on into one that is participatory, right? You got to get out there and understand things. There's this little tenet of law called informed consent. You know, when we elect a government, basically we're contracting with them, we're hiring them, and we're saying, okay, you've made us trust you. Now we're going to hand over to you the running of our nation. And if we're going to hand over to you the running of our nation, then you're going to have to be careful with that. Now, here's the thing. If a CEO or an HR department in any company in the world, any kind of company, hires an individual to do a job and they fail to do that job, what happens to them? They're fired, aren't they? Not our guys. No, not our elected officials. They get paid, they get their perks, no matter how they perform. Now, when you have a system that allows people to have complete autonomy, and worse than that, a group of people who can put their heads together and create an autonomy behind our backs without telling us in secret, what do you have? Do you have any kind of democracy where you're participating in decision making? No, you don't. What you have is a dictatorship. And worse yet, you have an oligarchy because you have a whole bunch of people running something together against another group. Okay? So that's the basis of what you got. Then when you look at who's pulling the strings on the oligarchy and you realize it's nobody who lives in your country, and that they've not only done that, but they've also manipulated international law so that your domestic law isn't worth a fig. Your constitution, our constitution, isn't worth a fig. Why? Well, that's because international law supersedes domestic law. And when you have international law superseding domestic law, you have people running your country from offshore. So you will see why I say to you, it's really extremely, extremely important that we know what's going on, that we take our responsibility and learn what's really going on so that we can voice our opinion in an effective manner. But I still see people who believe that, you know, 13 years ago, well, 12 and a bit years ago, the American people were attacked by Arabs. I mean, how anybody can have that opinion at this point in time is totally beyond me. Totally beyond me. Because in the meantime, you've had all the proof that it's all crap. All that proof includes what they did in Libya, what they did in Iraq, what they're doing with Syria, what they've done with Iran, what they're pulling off globally. Okay? If you add all these things up, you realize there's no damn way that anybody was attacked from outside without help from inside. Not only that, we still don't know all the details of exactly how that attack occurred because the official story doesn't even make sense. And yet, there's a huge number of people who still think they got to go over to the Middle East and get them Arabs. I mean, come on, people. Do you use your head for more than a hat rack or not? I mean, seriously, this is not a joke. Our children are being sent to war. They're coming back legless, armless, sightless, damaged, psychologically ruined, and irradiated from DU uranium, depleted uranium. I mean, add it up. What do you think should be going on? What do you think people should be doing? Do you really think, do you believe that you have an option in your government? Do you believe that if you elect the other side that things will be better? Or have you viewed Mouseland and know why it wouldn't be? That's why Mouseland is an important little video. Very, very much so. Because along with this goes with what the topic of our show is supposed to be, and we're still trying to get a hold of Maggie. But that topic is supposed to be, what does the government do about things like child abuse? Well, we all know right now that the government has, in all its wisdom, got everybody sensitized to the idea of child abuse, like, you better rat on your neighbor if you hear yelling and screaming and hitting going on next door. You better rat on your neighbor because otherwise you're a bad person. So now people rat other people out to Child and Family Services or Children's Aid Society or whatever. And what happens? What happens? Not necessarily what should happen. But what does happen is a whole lot of kids get taken into care. Now, I happen to have done a little research on this because of Maggie and a few other people that I know. And I'm looking at the fact that if a child is taken in for foster care, the agency itself makes a fair bit of money monthly from that. There's a payment that goes in. So it is a money machine. Do not make any mistake about that. If that child has special needs, the funding goes up. In the case of fostering, it doubles in the province of Ontario. It goes from 2,000 a kid to 4,000 a kid. Okay, half of that goes to the fostering family. The fostering family is forced to administer medications determined by none other than the system. So if you're like a friend of mine who is a foster parent and is an alternative healthcare practitioner in her own right, you are forced to deal with pharmaceutical alternatives that are not alternatives at all. Well, my friend, who shall remain nameless for obvious reasons, she goes out and she buys the prescriptions as ordered. But the kids she deals with don't take them. No, she uses her skills as a spiritual counselor and as a mother and a grandmother. And let me tell you, she's awesome at it. And she takes the hard cases. She takes the crack babies, the heroin babies, the ones who are, you know, in bad shape. And people rave about, gee, how do you cure them so well? How do you get them past all this stuff? How do you do that? And, of course, she shrugs her shoulders and says she doesn't know. And they think it's some kind of a gift. And what it is, she's done her research, and she knows her stuff, and she knows what these kids need. She knows it all. And because she knows it all, she's able to give it to them. And she does. And her kids heal. Not because of the system, but because of her. So, do we all need to get active on that score? Oh, yes, we do. I mean, come on, people. When I was growing up, and probably when you were growing up, you could go down the street, and if you fell and skinned your knee, every mother on the block was your mother. Every family on the block knew who you were, knew where you belonged, knew how old you were, and how many classes you took with their kids. We all grew up that way, in communities that cared about each other, that loved each other, that worked with each other, that helped each other, that supported each other. And where's that gone? Well, we're going shopping. Hop in the car, let's go to Walmart. There's where it went. There's where it went. We all chased John Dollar because they told us to, and John Dollar kicked us in the butt, which it was meant to do. So what do we have here? We have a mess, and who's going to clean it up for us? It ain't going to be you and me. It ain't going to be you and me, because you and me, we're sitting on our butt doing nothing. Is it going to be anybody else? Uh-uh, because they have a vested interest in the whole thing remaining exactly as it is, and in fact worse. So that little aspect of how things are going on turns right back to us. We are doing nothing. They are doing something. The nothing that we are doing is the stuff that could save us. Because we would all be participating, and we would all be having our say, and we would all be contributing to the betterment of all. But we're not doing that. We're letting these guys run the show. And what are these guys doing? Well, they're completely convoluting the show into a benefit for them and not a benefit for us. And that's the game. Okay, I'll address another little issue that's going on right now. A lot of you know about the investment people are making in the Iraqi dinar, because when the Americans went in, okay, that whole system was crashed. Their dinar was valued, and of course they're saying that it was a phony valuation because of Saddam Hussein having put the valuation on it, but bear in mind that when Saddam Hussein put the valuation on it, he was the CIA's darling. He was a friend of the United States, an ally of the United States. All kinds of pictures of Rumsfeld and Cheney, all these guys shaking hands with Saddam Hussein. All kinds of them. Same as with Gaddafi. He was, their darling until it became expedient for the U.S. government to turn him from a humanitarian award winner from the U.N. in January to a demon by the middle of spring. So, It's amazing what we will swallow without doing our research. But the key here is, did you do your research? Did you ask? Did you check? Did you look? And as the Buddha once said, he said, believe nothing because some wise person said it or because a multitude of people are saying. Believe it. Don't even believe it if I said it. He said, believe only that which you test and judge for yourself to be true. Only believe that. If it resonates as true with you, then it's true for you. And the problem, of course, with that is that truth is all about information. You can believe something is true because you don't have enough information. So if you are going to think critically about anything, you owe it to yourself and to the results that you want to find out all information. Don't miss anything. You were all taught in school how to do a scientific experiment. You put your objective down. You put your means of the test down. You put your materials for the test down, and then you perform the test. What are all the materials for the test? Information. You need information. And if you sit there and allow mainstream media to give you your information, well, gee, I can remember growing up in the 60s and hearing, gee, you believe everything you read? Well, no kidding. Apparently we do. Because look at the hold mainstream media has on everybody. And mainstream media, what were they? Well, they are thanked by people like J.D. Rockefeller and the movers and shakers who are doing all this damage. They're thanked for their complicity and told in public, thanks for your help. We couldn't have done it without you. So, do you believe everything you read or hear? Do you swallow every commercial? Do you go out and buy more Wi-Fi because, hey, look at this, I can have more fun, and ignore the fact that the Wi-Fi is frying your brain cells and your DNA and your sperm count? Gee, I thought you guys were all kind of, you know, a little paranoid about what's going to happen to the family jewels, yet you'll use your Wi-Fi and not even think about the fact that you are preventing yourself from having children. Like, duh. I mean, come on. Can I make it any more graphically clear than that? Why are we allowing these things to go on? Why are we swallowing it? Are we, in fact, as greedy as we see the elite to be? Apparently we are, in large numbers, because those of us who are trying to say, you know, get back to the simple way of life, get back to where people talk to each other, where they communicate with each other, where they share their feelings with each other, and don't do so in an abbreviated form of English, in a text. Hallelujah. Wouldn't that be something? You wonder how come we are so out of touch? We are so out of touch because we don't bother to get in touch. We seem to think that it is cooler and more, shall we say, interesting or entertaining to watch a movie on a little device that meanwhile is irradiating our DNA than to sit down across a room and watch a TV in a more safe manner. We think that when the hydro company, the electric company, comes in and swaps out an analog meter for a smart meter, we think that, oh, they're just upgrading. No, they're not. This is the NSA's wet dream, smart grid. It's the NSA's wet dream in terms of data gathering. They can tell from these smart meters which light you're using, what kind of a light bulb you've got in your lamp. Okay, another reference to me going out stocking up on incandescent light bulbs yesterday. I did. I got 24 of them in one go. I'm going to get some more. 24 of them will do me for probably a year or two, right? Another 24 will put me in the ground before the light bulbs are. So there you go. we have all this stuff coming at us. And the only thing that's going to stop anything is us. That's it. We are the finger in the dike. And we need the whole body in the dike, guys, not just a finger. Not just a finger. And in terms of proportion of people in the world who are doing something to help themselves and doing something to help others and doing something to protect what is left of our freedoms as human beings, well, that's a pretty small percentage, isn't it? Now, they say that if 10% of the population knows something, it's just a matter of time before the rest of the population knows. And we've got to be hitting that tipping point. We've got to be. Because after all this time, far too many people know far too much. The thing that is disappointing to me is how silent they remain. And that silence is what's going to kill us all. That silence is what's going to kill us all. Evil thrives when good men do nothing. That's what the saying says, isn't it? That's what the saying says. That's how it goes. So if we're going to survive this, if we're going to get past this, if we're going to make something out of this that we can all live with, then what's going to have to happen? Well, what's going to happen is a whole lot of people who are going to have to start getting active. As a friend of mine out in BC, Barbie M, you know who you are. Barbie said, these days, if you're not an activist, you are a victim. And I don't think truer words were ever spoken, because I look around me and I see people being victimized over and over and over by a system that they fully support. And that's the whole point right there. If you see something you don't like and you say nothing, are you not part of the problem? If you're part of the problem, how can you expect a solution? Well, you can't, can you? You can't. And because you can't expect a solution, you're going to sit there in your misery and watch it get worse and worse and worse for everybody. Now, what in the name of all that's holy is the percentage in that, I got to ask? Like, why do you do that kind of stuff? Why would you do that kind of stuff or not do that kind of stuff? Well, it's because you're so comfortable in your little sinecure in your living room watching, you know, the Super Bowl, which is coming up soon, and, you know, all of that stuff. And, gee, Victoria's Secret fashion show, oh, my, we know where all the men of the world were on the night that showed up, don't we? We know. So if that's the case, that we're being sucked into all of that stuff, how exactly is it? How exactly is it that we come to find out that our government has taken over everything that we do? And how is it that they can do all these trade agreements that put us under international law behind our backs, declare it secret? Right? They declare these things all secret. You can't sign one unless you agree to absolute secrecy. And if you let that out, this is a problem that's popping up with a few politicians that I'm aware of. You know, the odd guy in there is honest, but is also powerless to fight against these trade agreements. And some of them are now noticing that this is exactly what's happening, and that it's happening from the ground up and the top down. It's all going on right in front of us. And this secrecy bit is something that is absolutely horrendous. Now, since we still haven't got Maggie on, I don't know where Maggie's got to. I don't know how Maggie disappeared on us, but we don't have Maggie. You know, if Angel, if you're listening, you know, and you want to call in, oh, please, yes, do. But in the meantime, we'll keep trying and I'll keep talking. I have to take the opportunity to repeat to you again what is going on with two issues that I want to touch on. One of them is the trade agreements, and I'll touch on that first because we've just been talking about them. The other one is genetically modified foods and the labeling of thereof. And I got a few things to say that are going to shake a few people up, so please hang in and listen on that one. But in the meantime, let's talk for a bit on these trade agreements. Now, people who know me and have known me for a long time know that it was at least 10 to 12 years ago that I started complaining about these trade groups and exactly what they do, what they can do, what they cause. And people were not listening to me because they didn't have enough information and they thought I was full of it and, whatever the reason was. But in the meantime, these things, because they've been around for so long and because eventually things that have been, you know, submerged tend to float to the surface. These things are now floating to the surface, and guess what? The terms of these agreements are now becoming more and more obvious. What are the terms of these agreements, and where did they start? Well, we all know that the UN was the engendering body for the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. Okay, now the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs was replaced by the World Trade Organization in the early 90s. It was signed on to by Canada in, I believe, 1994. Now, the World Trade Organization replaced GATT. So when you look at the World Trade Organization rules and you find out that the people who were involved in GATT are also involved in the federal government's negotiation teams for subsequent agreements, you realize where these rules came from. They came from GATT. And in GATT, there was the secrecy terminology that translated into the World Trade Organization, that translated into all these trade agreements emanating through and enforced by and sanctioned by the World Trade Organization, and that would include the TPP that we've been hearing about and the CETA agreement that we've been hearing about and another CETA that is being negotiated, just starting to be negotiated between the U.S. and the U.K., which puts them under the same kind of agreement that we're going to be under once they ratify this, and they're about to send the whole thing to the provinces for ratification. But let's get back to the process. Okay? In these agreements, and proclaimed openly on the World Trade site, a Trade Organization site, is one simple thing. It's called the TRIPS rule. TRIPS, T-R-I-P-S, stands for Trade-Related Intellectual Property Rules. Trade-Related Intellectual Properties are patents. Patents are the proprietary information about their products, okay? If Monsanto has a GMO seed, for example, is patented. Okay? Somebody has a chemical they've invented, it's patented. Somebody has a machine they invented, it's patented. So, under the TRIPS rules, and these go all the way back to GATT, all the way back, if a country joins a trade agreement, multinational corporations represented by the countries that are in the trade agreement are guaranteed profitability on their patents. And what that means is, especially now consider Monsanto, consider Big Pharma, consider Smart Grid, all that kind of stuff. Okay, what's happening is these guys who are instituting these things worldwide are given the absolute right to make money off it. And if we say no, we get sued under international law. Okay? And when we get sued, it is the taxpayer who pays the sanction. Now, I'll give you an example. Right now, Eli Lilly, the makers of Prozac and a number of other very nasty drugs, is suing the country of Canada for $500 million. Why? Because Health Canada, doing something actually half decent for once, refused to extend the patent on Prozac for yet another 8 years. It's been extended over and over and over and over again. Okay? Now, if they stop extending the patent, that means generics can be produced much more cheaply. Now, the interesting thing about Prozac is I happen to know for a fact that the profit margin on one pill is 234,000% of the cost it takes to make it. So you can see that the price of Prozac under a generic label would drop substantially. Now, whether or not you believe Prozac is a good thing, I for one think it's, you know, the last thing on earth I would ever allow anyone to put into my body next to a vaccine. It would be anything like that. Regardless, the thing is that you can see the money manipulation going on, and you can see that there's secrecy involved in these things. There's profitability guarantees in these things. And now, under Chapter 11 of NAFTA, which basically is the version of the TRIPS rules within our first trade agreement with the United States, that's where the suit is coming from. So you're going to see a lot more lawsuits like that, where for some reason or another, the profitability of this patent or that patent is being damaged because people are saying, we don't want GMOs, or we don't want this, or we don't want that. And they can't figure out for the life of them how come their courts and their government are not agreeing with them when there's so many thousands and thousands and millions of people objecting worldwide. Why are they not listening? Why is it that the Organic Consumers Association and all these big groups around the world can be screaming their faces off, and yet they're not being listened to? How's that possible? Well, it's possible because the TRIPS rules guarantee it. And because of the secrecy involved in these rules and the secrecy involved in the agreements themselves and the sanctions that come if you happen to open your mouth to the wrong people about the wrong stuff, guess what? The courts can't say a damn thing about it. So you see the Percy Schmeisers and, you know, the raw milk producers and the this and the that, all these guys going down in flames in front of judges who we think should have known better. Well, how do we know the judges didn't know better? We don't. And why don't we? Well, that would be because of the TRIPS rule. Now, interestingly enough, I spoke to Shelley Ann Clark a little while back. And Shelley Ann Clark, as some of you may remember, was a woman who actually typed up the trade agreements between the United States and Canada, the very first one. This is back in 87 and 88. Didn't take them long to put them into swing, right? We joined the World Trade Organization in 94, so this one even preceded that. It even preceded that. They wasted no time at all in getting these things going. And what did Shelley Ann tell me? She is one brave lady, let me tell you. She whistleblew against the entire government, and she has suffered like you would not believe for opening her mouth. Okay, what she told me was that each of the provincial premiers who are now going to be regaled with all kinds of information on the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement with the UK, or with the EU, I should say, pardon me, these people are going to get the same treatment, i.e., each provincial premier is going to get a package that reflects what the federal government thinks each provincial premier wants. So they're going to read these packages just like they did when Shelley Ann typed up 10 different ones, one for each different province, none of them saying exactly the same thing, and each one of them coded so that if any information leaked out, they knew exactly which one leaked it. And Shelley Ann tells me two things. She says, firstly, all of these things, the provinces never got the proper information, okay? And secondly, that no Canadian, aside from the team and the government that were involved in making this agreement, and that would include the MPs on the back benches, I'm talking only about the ones who are in the inner circle, Privy Council, that would be like the czars in the States, the Privy Council, or the cabinet, but it goes beyond the cabinet because not just the ministers, it's people who are influential. Now, it's all gone through them. They know what's in it, but they declared the whole thing secret. Then they said at one point they were going to put the thing on display. And Shelley Ann tells me she and her assistant went trucking down to the National Archive building in Ottawa to see the actual agreement. And Shelley Ann, who typed up the agreement, looked and all she could see was an agreement sitting in a glass case with the front page available to be read. That's it. You didn't even get the index. All you got was the front cover. That's all they would show. They had it on display for a little while, and then they secured it in the Diefenbaker bunker, which is a document repository about 50 miles north of Ottawa. Now, in this particular repository, things are in there that are declared national security. Now, I got to ask, what in the flying blue blazes does national security have to do with a trade agreement? Because it's totally beyond me. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we're talking about a business deal between nations. What the hell happened to a handshake? What the hell happened to honor among thieves? Even if you want to be thief, there's still honor among thieves. So where is that now? Apparently, we're not allowed to see any of it. Even my cat's objecting. Tinker, you're on the radio. No, be quiet. Thank you. You're interrupting your mother. Sorry, guys. But at any rate, you know, this is what we're up against. We've got secrecy going on. We've got trade agreements that literally tie the world together like a sweater, like it's got a net around it. And all they got to do is pull it tight. Because each one of these agreements is under absolute secrecy. That means nobody can tell us what we're fighting. Now, how do you fight a ghost? You don't. Can't fight a ghost. I mean, you know, people with certain skills could probably do it, but you know what I mean? I mean, how do you fight something you can't see and you can't hit? It's a little disheartening and a little upsetting when you see what's stacked against us. But really, when you think about the other end of things, just think about the other end of things. The other end of things is this. We outnumber them. We outnumber them seriously. It is 8 billion of us on this planet, 8 billion of us, against the group that is controlling us. How are they controlling us? Well, they're controlling us by making us believe that we have no power. Do we actually have no power? That would be interesting, because we are the power that put them there in the first place. You know, I don't know about how many of you had a mother like mine, okay? But when my mother got real mad, she'd say, I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it. Of course, she didn't mean it. But we should all be saying that about the governments that we have that are totally ripping us apart. Where is our responsibility to ourselves, to each other, to our nation, to the land that we live on, and to the earth that feeds us all? Where is that responsibility? Are you going to find it on your TV set watching Victoria's Secret fashion show? I think not. Are you going to find it in a football game or a basketball game or a Grammy Award show where some artist or other is bearing way too much for her age to a whole bunch of people that shouldn't be looking anyway? Is that what we're about now? Is that where what we've come to, that we can let these things happen to us and say nothing? Democracy is not democracy unless everybody knows everything, okay? You have to give consent to your government's activities. That's what democracy is all about. But you can't give informed consent if you're uninformed. And we are all uninformed. What are you going to do about that? As you can see, I'm doing the best I can. You know, although I sometimes feel guilty because, you know, I'm doing what I can, but is it enough? No, of course not. One person can't do everything. But if one person can inflame the odd person here and there who's going to go out and duplicate that effort and keep going, and then they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, well, pretty soon we're viral. And once we're viral, guess what? We've got some say in things, only because we demanded it, not because we never had it. And that's the truth. If you think it's not true, think about all the things that have been manipulated and influenced and taken care of by people who just had the will to fight. Would there be an America without the will to fight? I think not. And what do I mean by fight? Do I mean pick up your guns and shoot them all? No, of course not. Of course not. Doing harm is not part of fixing anything. Never part of fixing anything. So, are we anti-government in these statements? No, we are not. Nobody is saying that the government is an unnecessary thing. We all need some management in the sense of services. I mean, we're too big. We're too big not to have a government, not to have people taking care of our needs. We're too big. And we can't go back to the simple life tomorrow. We can't each have our little patch of land tomorrow on which to grow our food and educate our children and be a warm, loving little community in little towns across the country, the way this country was built. Little towns became big towns because of what? The railroad. So in other words, the whole thing started when conveniences were being brought to the table. The more convenience we had, the more specialness we had, the bigger we got, because that's what we chased. We did not chase our values. We did not chase our security, our real security. We didn't chase these things. Instead, we increasingly and incrementally handed over responsibility for these things to wealthy people. And wealthy people usually get wealthy by walking all over not-so-wealthy people. So, should we ever have trusted wealthy people to run the poor? Oh, come on. Come on. How many of you put foxes in charge of chicken houses out there? That'd be about the equivalent thing, wouldn't it? So what you need is you need people who are going to guide and direct with the kind of loyalty and compassion and love of the people that guarantees that their actions while in office are going to be in the favor of said people. They're going to be fair. They're going to be just. They're not going to be corrupt. The hands are not going to be in the cookie jars. When they estimate that half of public money is either lost or stolen, isn't that enough to give you pause? That estimation has been in existence for many years. It's not new. In fact, since it's been in existence for all these years and we've all known about it for so long, why is that statistic still holding true? Why is that? That would be primarily because we're too busy taking care of ourselves to take care of each other and take care of our future. And by becoming insular and by losing touch with our neighbors, we not only lose touch with what's right for us, but also what's right for our country, because we are so self-centered in our lives that we don't participate, don't help, don't gather information, don't go the extra mile to find the right information, believe things we say out of talking heads on TV who are paid a whole lot of money to sound credible. You know, one of the top guys on ABC News in the States, the guy by the name of J.D. Roberts. You know, J.D. Roberts is from Toronto, and I knew J.D. when he was a kid. Okay? Now he's a top dog, and I wish I could get a hold of him now. He's not so easy to get a hold of anymore, but, you know, I'd like to kind of shake him up and down and say, J.D., how's it feel to be spewing lies on a daily basis? How does that feel to you? Does that feel okay? What about all these news people that we know of? One of them lives a block away from my house. A block away from my house. And he's a news reporter, a fairly major one in Toronto. And I asked him a while back, how's that feel? He didn't really have an answer for me. He didn't really know what I was talking about. Now, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And this is a guy from CP24. CP24 is a news station out of Toronto, and it's pretty major. Pretty major. In fact, it's major enough to be broadcast in every subway station on the Toronto Transit line. So how about that? You know, we have access to these people. Why are we not influencing them? Why are we not going pounding on their doors and saying, excuse me, you know you're not telling the truth. You live next door to me, or you live two doors from me. You know, I'm not pleased at having you in my neighborhood if you're going to be lying to people. You know, put it into the personal context. Call on their honor. If there were honor out there, you know, I hear a lot about that from the military, especially the Marines. Oh, honor, semper fi, and all that kind of crap. Was semper fi to what? You know, you can be semper fi to the mob. And that's pretty much what you're doing if you're semper fi to the government that sent you over there to kill people in egregious manners. Right? What about this drone thing? Are you comfortable shooting children in a barrel? Because that's what a drone program does. And the drone pilots who sit ensconced in little rooms thousands of miles away from the battlefield. I mean, they could be on a ship in the Strait of Hormuz. Or they could be at Fort Ord in California. Or they could be at any other military installation directing these things like they're a video game and coming out now whistleblowing and saying, you know what, the resolution on these things is not good. We don't know if somebody's carrying a shovel or a rifle. But they shoot them anyway. What's that about? Is America and Canada, and I'm, you know, we're not innocent here. I'm not pointing fingers at the U.S. because our Canadian government has been in there like a dirty shirt with Harper's nose squarely up Obama's behind. Okay? We were the guys. Canadian Special Forces busted Saddam's bunker in 91. Nobody knew that. Our involvement with U.S. military is very, very heavy. How comfortable are Canadians, how comfortable are Americans with the idea that there are people dying by the droves over there because of nothing more than a lie? How does that make you feel as a human being? And look at all the soldiers who are coming back and not able to cope with what they did. And look at how many of them are now homeless. Over 100,000 veterans homeless in the United States. Not all because they don't have the monetary support, but very often because they don't have the mental support. We have cases where soldiers are coming back and committing suicide. We have an extremely high rate of suicide over there within the troops that are there. And now they're coming back and bringing those problems home. We have irradiated troops who have been irradiating their families, irradiating their wives and husbands coming back. And nobody's saying anything about that. And you've got all these guys in the Veterans Administration who have lost legs, lost limbs, and they come back and they've suffered the same kind of trauma. Like, my God, what have we done? We're killing children. We're killing women. We're killing babies. And the whole thing is, like, it boggles the mind. It boggles the mind. Brass Check TV came out with a video today showing what happened in Libya and showing that, you know, there were no rebels like they told us. We were not supporting rebels. Those were CIA-backed people who were in there for a photo op. Otherwise, how could the same white Ford pickup truck with the same mounted gun in the back and the same idiots with baseball caps riding around in the back hooting and hollering, waving rifles in the air? How is it that was a revolution? How is it that there was a central bank of Benghazi set up in the so-called rebel stronghold of Benghazi, okay, within 2 weeks of the no-fly zone being instituted, that no-fly zone that turned into bombing runs, okay? And this is before Gaddafi was deposed, before the Libyan government was dissolved, before any of that happened. All of a sudden, there's a central bank, which is a bank for a nation, set up where? In Benghazi. And it's sanctioned by whom? The International Monetary Fund, that's who. Now, what in the flying blue blazes was the IMF doing sanctioning a bank, a central bank, in a country that's in a state of war and doesn't have a government? Right? What were they doing? Good question. Could be somebody slipped up and opened up their plans in the first place. Now, rewind just a tad from there and take a look at what Gaddafi was doing. Okay? What he was doing at the time was he was promoting a gold-backed dinar, okay, gold-backed, not Federal Reserve-backed, not money printed out of nothing, but money that was actually backed by gold in repositories, and he wanted a gold-backed dinar for all of Africa, all of the continent. And that's what he had been pushing for a long time, as did Saddam Hussein. Okay, Saddam Hussein wanted to go off the American dollar standard because he found that he was being cheated. Why did they go after him in the first place? Well, Kuwait was slant drilling underneath their border and stealing Iraqi oil. Saddam Hussein goes to April Glasby, who's the U.S. ambassador at the time, and says, "What does the president want me to do about this?" April Glasby comes back, and what does she say to him? The president doesn't care what you do. Do what you want. So shortly after that, Iraq invades Kuwait to stop them from slant drilling and stealing from them. And all of a sudden, Hussein is the bad guy. Did Saddam gas his own people? Nope. You know who told me that? A Kurdish fellow who lives around the corner from me. He says, "Oh, you know the truth." He says, "No, that was the Iranians who gassed us, not the Iraqis. It wasn't the right kind of gas." My. So it's all about the information, isn't it? They can demonize somebody by telling you stuff, but is that stuff they tell you true? If it's not true, should you act on it? the first day after 9-1-1, the day of 9-1-1, when people were screaming about who did it and, you know, we got to go get them and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sitting here, wait a minute, your first question should be, why did you do that? Because usually, I mean, to my mind, people don't usually act like that unless they got a grievance. So what's the grievance? And if there's a grievance and all the people of America know about it, all of the people of America, I think, are decent enough. They're decent enough, kind enough, compassionate enough people that they would say, okay, well, let's fix this then. How do we do that? And they would have sat down to do it. But, oh, no, what do we get? We get pure Hegel, pure Hegelian dialectic. As Bush takes a podium in front of the demolished World Trade Center ruins while they're still smoking, and he says, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Which terrorists? At that point in time, they didn't have a word to tell us, except for, it had to be Bin Laden. And in the meantime, what are they doing? While they lock down all the air bases in the country, all the airports, all the flights are grounded, except for the Osama bin Laden family, the bin Laden family, all friends of the Bush regime, flew out of there on a private jet. How did they get the sanction to fly out? How's that possible? How is it they couldn't find Cheney for hours? I mean, and what brought the towers down? I mean, all of this information was skipped over, ignored, and not dealt with before a response was designed. How can you respond to anything appropriately if you don't have all the information? You can't. It's not possible. If you don't know how an engine works, you can't fix it. If you don't know how to change a tire, you will sit by the side of the road until somebody comes along who can. Why? Because you don't understand what you're dealing with. So why is it that this population of ours is in such a mess? We don't understand what we're dealing with. Why don't we understand? Well, two reasons. Firstly, because we believe what we hear. And secondly, because we're too busy to bother with it. We're too busy having fun. We're too busy going out there and getting in debt. And because we're too busy going out there and getting in debt, guess what? We're all slaves to the system. And then they come along, these big multinational corporations. And these big multinational corporations, backed by their trade agreements and their guarantee of patent profitability, they come marching in. And they say, if you leave our trade agreement, we will leave your country. And all the people who work for us will no longer have jobs. And that's how they do it. They put a chain around your ankle that you can't break without damaging yourself. And that's how they do it. So now what we've got is we're all tied up with these chains that bind us to other countries, which are manipulated and designed by people who do not have our best interest at heart, never would have or will have our best interest at heart, and who are merely manipulating in order to make more money. These people are the ones who are in charge because we do not pay any attention. So if we turn our back, turn a blind eye to what's going on around us, then it could be said, I guess, that we deserve everything that we get. And considering the fact that we outnumber these guys, that we have at least as many brain cells as they do, and at least as many powers of observation and powers of speech and powers of the pen as they do, guess what? We can take it back. but you're not going to take it back on the basis of Jesus is going to save you. Uh-uh. The whole deal is, if you follow Jesus, you will know how to save yourself. That's the thing. Goes back to the old joke about the guy who drowned, waiting because he heard a voice from God saying in a flood that God would protect him no matter what. And there he is sitting on his roof in the middle of a flood, and you know, boats come by, and he says, no thanks, I'm fine, I'll be fine. And of course, eventually he drowns, and he goes up to St. Peter, and he says, I don't understand why I'm here. God promised me that he was going to save me. Okay? And St. Peter says to him, you didn't notice the canoe? You didn't notice the raft? You didn't notice the motorboat? You didn't even notice the logs floating by? You see what I'm saying? So if you don't participate, can God believe you mean it? No! You want to say, I want to be saved? Then don't go put yourself in a position of precariousness. Old Chinese secret that I made up myself years ago, and it said, man who expose himself to unnecessary risk only invite disaster upon self. That's a quote from me. Not from Lao Tzu or ancient Chinese wisdom, I just phrased it that way. A man who invites unnecessary risk upon himself also invites disaster. And so here we are, all taking an unnecessary risk, aren't we? If we put somebody in power and we pay no attention to who they are or what they do, and if they step out of line and they damage us, and we do nothing, and we say nothing, whose problem is it? Theirs or ours? You know, the old line about character used to go that character is defined as what a person will do when they think they won't get caught. Well, these guys can do anything they want without getting caught because nobody's going out there to catch them. And yet we could catch them all. I mean, look at our own prime minister in Canada. The guy was convicted of contempt of parliament. Did he ever get any sanction for that? Did he ever get punished for that? Hell no. If you or I have a small criminal record and try and go get a job, do we get the job? No. Check out the criminal records of the people who are in Congress and in parliament, and you will be shocked to find, shocked that about two-thirds of both houses have had some kind of fracas with the law. And it would go from wife abuse to money manipulation to conflict of interest to, you know, illegal use of this or that, all kinds of stuff. Two-thirds of them. Two-thirds of them. So, my. This is where we're sitting. This is where we're sitting. And why are we sitting here? Why are our children getting nabbed by social services? Why is it that people aren't standing up and saying, wait a minute, this is a good family you took these kids from? Why is it that David Icke, for example, is putting out his newsletter in public instead of keeping it for his paid subscribers? David Icke saw the issue of child trafficking and pedophilia and all that stuff to be important enough to share with everybody for free. Now, when Icke does that, there's got to be something going on. He's pointing at pedophilia that goes all the way up into the House of Windsor, all the way up to Buckingham Palace, all the way up into government. And if we look down here, you go looking at the Franklin cover-up, you look at Kathy O'Brien's work, you look at a whole pile of other stuff, and what you find is that these guys are not only criminal on the business end of things, but a whole pile of the ones who are running things are actually promoting things like pedophilia and child trafficking. And the systems that they have are promoting that. Now, clearly, Dawn's been unable here to get a hold of Maggie. We're now sitting with about 20 minutes left in the show. So rather than go into that issue extensively, I'd rather see if we can't set up another day where we can get Maggie on without any kind of interference and, you know, see what happens on that day. Let her have her say, because it is very, very, very important that people understand exactly what kind of agencies we're dealing with now. I mean, you've got story after story after story of people having their children grabbed because parents wanted to take medical control over their child's life. And you saw probably in the news, in the alternative news anyway, some time back, a story about a little Quaker girl who was, you know, dealing with a form of cancer, and they wanted to force her, they wanted to force her and her family to take chemotherapy, and that would be totally running against what the Quakers believe in and everything else. They opted for natural means, but they had to take their child out of the country in order to employ them. So then they come back, the child is cured. Cancer cures abound out there, people. Don't ever let a cancer diagnosis scare you, because there are hundreds of legitimate cancer cures out there that have been suppressed. Hundreds of them, okay? Baking soda and maple sugar protocols, Dr. Simoncini from Italy, okay? Miracle mineral solution, Jim Humble, Bishop Jim Humble, they formed a church. It sounds kind of crazy, but in order to avoid the FDA, you got to do crazy things. So they formed a church so people could have miracle mineral solution, which is sodium chlorite. And, you know, that has cured everything from malaria to AIDS, provably. It's all been proven. The Red Cross proved its effectiveness against malaria, of which 1 million children die, or 2 million children die annually. They cured malaria with MMS in 24 hours. The most egregious cases took 48, okay? But all patients were shown to be malaria-free after a maximum of 48 hours. And yet, the Red Cross turned around and said, oh, no, that didn't happen. Well, fortunately, the whole thing was videotaped. And now they can't argue with it. Same deal with everything else. The flu shot, oh boy. It says right on the package insert, people, that if you take a flu shot, you should avoid children and the elderly, anyone with a compromised immune system, for anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks, because you will be shedding live virus. In other words, take a flu shot, become Typhoid Mary. That's what it says. Right on the package insert. Don't believe me, go to your doctor, ask him to show you the package insert. Or you can Google the product online, the package inserts are there. You just need to know the name of the vaccine they're giving you, and you can look it up online. And they all say, when you take it, you get contagious. Now, think of it. All of the staff in a healthcare institution like a hospital or a nursing home or a seniors residence, long-term care facility, children's hospital, all these nurses and doctors taking their flu shots and going out on the wards. And when they go out on the wards, they're shedding virus. And that means that not only are you getting all kinds of things like super viruses developing because of stuff that we're taking, we're not only that, but we're also getting contagious with whatever they're putting in these shots. And quite frankly, most of the things that go into any kind of vaccine, or a lot of the shots that they give, any kind of injection, a lot of stuff in them actually belongs on a garage wall hanging from a hook. You know, things like aluminum and mercury and antifreeze, okay? They're all in the shots. Now, anybody who thinks that slamming up a baby's body with that kind of crap is a good thing, slamming 5 or 6 of those vaccines at once into a baby's bloodstream is okay? You need your head examined, people. You need your head examined if you think that's the case. Do your research. What have I been talking about for the last hour and a bit? I've been talking about taking your responsibility for the information that you have, without which you cannot give informed consent. You're merely following somebody else's idea of what you should do. You are not free. You are an animal with a collar and a leash on, because you're following along with your so-called owners. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't have an owner, unless his name is God. I don't have an owner. As far as any kind of ownership in the physical plane, that would be between me and God and no one else. And a truly free person follows along not because they're forced to, but because they want to. Now, which are you? Are you an animal following the wrong owner for the wrong reason? Or are you someone who roams wild and free and proud and harmlessly through your life as a free individual who knows that what goes around comes around, who knows what the law of karma is, who knows if you put out no harm can come to you? And that would include, by the way, harm to oneself. You get that back, too. That's why bad things happen to good people. Because if you treat yourself like crap, that crap's going to come back to you. And then, gee, why would that thing happen to that person? She'd give them the shirt off their back. Yeah, but she wouldn't give herself the shirt off her back. Everybody else, yeah. But she leaves herself out. She's leaving out a child of God. Okay, now we're 10 minutes before the hour. And I want to make one very, very important point about genetically modified organisms and what's being foisted on us in terms of GMO labeling. Now, we've all seen the humongous effort that's going on. Oh, everybody, GMO's got to be labeled, GMO's got to be labeled, GMO's got to be labeled, and I'm going, wait a minute. I got a major problem with labeling of GMOs, okay? There's a couple of things we know about GMOs. One of those things is if you turn them loose, you can't get them back. You can't unring the bell because you're dealing with pollen and wind and birds and insects and things that go where they damn well want without our say-so. Okay? So if you're planting these things, they're going to spread. And you know who found that out was a guy by the name of Percy Schmeiser in Canada here who, Percy, he had a canola field. Now, I don't like canola. I think it's a hybridized crop that's been engineered, but not genetically. The thing is that it's always been toxic, always been a problem. It's rapeseed oil. It's modified rapeseed oil. And it's very, very poisonous. But at any rate, he was growing canola. And next door to his property was a field of GM canola being grown by Monsanto. Now, after a little while, what happened was Percy's field got infested, of course, with genetically modified canola. Monsanto agents went in there and they found the Roundup genes, BT toxins, Bacillus thuringiensis is the name that when you see BT, that's what it stands for, Bacillus thuringiensis. It is the toxin that these plants are genetically modified to produce and which has been found in the human digestive tract, in the cord blood of newborn infants, and in just about everybody, because it appears now that once this bacteria settles in the human gut, it causes leaky gut syndrome, which means that it thins the walls of your intestines, and bacteria can actually osmose through the walls of the intestines into your bloodstream and wind up in your brain. So it kind of gives a new definition to shit for brains, doesn't it? Now, that's the kind of thing that Monsanto is doing to us. And people say, oh, well, go out and label it. Label it? Are you kidding me? Labeling it legitimizes the growth of these crops. The growth of these crops guarantees that all our crops get infested. So why on earth would you want to legitimize poisonous crops, literally toxic weeds? Why would you want to legitimize that and say, well, people have their choice now? Well, they won't for long. They won't for long, because the more this stuff starts infesting the fields, the more we're eating of it. And if you go into your supermarket right now, 90%, they estimate, 90% of the processed and packaged goods that are on the shelves have some GMO component. And they estimate that Americans are now eating their weight in genetically modified organisms every year. And you wonder, how come? How come is it that you need a whole new healthcare system because the one you've got is collapsing? And by the way, ain't it a pip? Ain't it just a pip to see exactly how it's collapsing? I mean, it's pretty crazy. It is pretty crazy what's going on out there. Because you're talking about the system, the healthcare system that is being foisted on people is Obamacare right now. It's very, very, very scary stuff. Very scary. Why is it scary? Well, that would be because there's a huge, huge, huge number of people who just lost all their health care. And remember Obama, he said it 23 times. During the course of his big campaign to get it passed. If you like your health care plan, you can keep it. Well, he needs to explain that to the hundreds of thousands of Americans who are now not insured. And not only that, the whole system depends on young people, young healthy people, paying into the system to support the old sick ones on the other end. Is there any surprise that there are clauses in the Affordable Care Act that allow for death counsels? And you know there was a whole hoo-ha about that. They said, oh, no, they're not there, they're not there. Well, Google the Liverpool Care Pathway and tell me it's not there. Liverpool Care Pathway is a policy that is going worldwide, it's going viral, and that Liverpool care policy basically says if it is not economically expedient to take care of somebody, they're going to let them die. And so they withhold medication, and usually the people are dead. They are refused water and food and medication, and after about 3 days, they're dead. End of story. And that is the Liverpool care pathway. And the death panels that were mentioned and that people screamed about a couple of years ago, that, oh, these things are horrible, they can't be in there. Well, they are in there. The wording is in there. And no, it's not about keeping you healthy. It's about keeping the money flowing. It's also about discriminating against your ability to access natural care or the kind of care you want. It's about restricting doctors from doing their business. It's about forcing doctors out of business. Thousands of them are retiring because they can't deal with Obamacare. They're being told how much money they can make under Obamacare. They won't tolerate that. A lot of them are quitting. So this whole system is falling down on its face in front of us, and a few people are squawking and saying, what's going on? And the rest of us are sitting there, I'm okay, I got my health care plan, and letting the rest of their fellow Americans wallow in the crap. Hello, people. It's for everybody. It's not just for you. It's not just for me. It's for everybody. And if it's for everybody, then everybody's got to get a fair shake or nobody's getting a fair shake. So that is going to be something that Americans have to pay close attention in the coming weeks and months, and they're going to have to really keep on top of it. We've come to the end of the show for another weekend, and I'll wish you a happy new year, but I'll wish you an aware one as well. Please, people, wake up to what's around you. Take care of yourselves and each other, and may 2014 be a year of love for all. Take care, everyone, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.